both hailing from parts unknown at a combined weight of 501 pounds. They are the Morning Rush Hour World Tag Team Champions. They have no fear, no back down, just a couple of gutsy guys. No one will take those MRH World Tag titles from these men. It's Taz, it's the Moose, illustrious champions, right here every day on CBS Sports Radio.
You know it's every day, Moose and Taz be paving the way. Talking about every sport, you know that they never missing a play. From the NBA to the NFL, the college games, they always bringing the knowledge, nobody ever can try to go stop it. Only be talking the truth, only be talking the truth, ayy.
Yes, yes, yes. We've hit the second hour, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, 4 Pacific. Taz and the Moose with you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We've got Mike and Pierno across the way. Bogus, your updates, 9 a.m. Eastern Time we go. We're going to talk a little Bengals football a little later on this hour as Dave Lapham is going to join us. Bengals Radio Network, color analyst on the Bengals Radio Network will join us. We'll talk a little Cincy football. And coming up later on in the show, we're going to talk a little Rams football with DeMarco Farr. Very, very good defensive lineman in his day. And now the Rams sideline reporter and a Super Bowl champion. So he'll join us to close out the program coming your way at 8:40 a.m. Eastern time. But we kick off the second hour. Let's go camping.
Time to go camping, boys and girls. Who better to go sit around the campfire and spitball some football, eat some pork beans, brisket, and throw back some cold ones than with Taz and the Moose?
It's Taz and the Moose. Just talking away. It's all you ever heard talking smack since the day they was born. It's Taz and the Moose, just talking away. It's all you ever heard talking smack since the day they was born.
Is that supposed to be pork and beans? He said pork beans. Who says pork beans? It's pork and beans.
All right, let's just enjoy the open.
Let's get it right. But that's a whole nother story. We need a name for this thing. So we had a lot of people, Moose, as you know, submit names. Yeah. And we have to say a big thank you to everybody. There was a plethora of suggestions on the name of this segment. And so Mikey B and his team, they couldn't get all of them out here, Moose, as far as for us to put on social media and whatnot. But thank you to everybody who put one in. If you would like to vote, go to Taz. I just retweeted from my account. You can go to Taz and the Moose, though, if you'd like. Go to that Twitter account, at Taz and the Moose, and you could vote. So, Moose, why don't you lay out for us who we got here? What's our options?
Right. What should we name our training camp segment? The options are the campgrounds, which was the Kingsman gave us that suggestion.
Right.
Gone Gridiron Camping, a gentleman by the name of Steve Bellevue.
Bellevue.
Gridiron Camping, just by a guy. And go and gone camping, which was mock.
The Moose. So there you have. Okay, that's by the Moose.
Mark Malusis.
So we have four suggestions, and one is from a co-host.
Correct.
So I get this straight. Okay, got it. That's kind of weird. So right now, if we did a quick social media update, because as people are voting already.
Right. 43% campgrounds.
Okay, I was going to do the kind of my bit here. If we do a quick social media update. I know it's your new one to show, Moose, but you'll get this. So here's the thing. Campgrounds got 50%. Gone Gridiron Camp at 17%. Gridiron Camp at 17%. Go/Gone Camping 17%. Mm. Wow. Social media team really shouldn't have typed that like that. Go/Gone Camping. That's going to get no votes because the name sounds silly when you read it on there. Ah. I voted. And I'm going to check. Is it okay if I say who I voted for? What I voted for?
Sure.
Sure I will. I voted for the campgrounds. I think the Kingsman's onto something.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I like that one. The campgrounds is good. The campgrounds with Taz and the Moose. It's
nice. Perfect.
Then we'll have Zachary do it.
There you have it.
That'll be easy.
Very nice. Yeah, so thank you for everyone and all the suggestions.
Sure.
Hop online at Taz and the Moose and give it a vote. All right, so
all right.
Let's run around the National Football League, shall we? The Dolphins, they yesterday fired offensive line coach Pat Flaherty 1 week into camp. They didn't reportedly didn't like the way the offensive line was working. Didn't look like love the way the offensive line looked early on in training camp.
Yep.
And their new head coach decides to go in a new direction. And Pat Flaherty is really kind of a legendary. If you're a fan of the New York Giants, former offensive line coach with the Giants. Worked under Tom Coughlin. So Flaherty's been around. It's not like he's a first-year offensive line coach. He gets let go. Down in Miami, he's out the door.
And Moose, you said it by the new head coach, and that's Brian Flores, who was with the Patriots under Belichick. So Brian Flores, new head coach of Miami Dolphins, he hires Pat Flaherty less than 6 months ago, and he fires him Monday.
Yeah.
Like, it's after four training camp practices. Apparently, he didn't like the way the offensive line was getting pushed around early in this camp. And that was it. That's kind of, listen, man, if Pat Flaherty was someone that Flores inherited as a coach there, you know what I mean? Like, if he didn't bring him in himself, then I could understand this a little bit better. But gee whiz, I mean, God, dog it, man. I mean, we're not there. Who knows what's going on? But, man, he hired the guy 6 months ago. Next year, thanks for coming. See you later.
Right, but, if your floor is down there in Miami, if you don't like the way it's working and you don't like the job that he's doing, isn't it better to cut bait than continue with what you think?
After four practices, Moose?
Well, I think it's more than probably just the four practices.
I would assume, but it all comes down to what happens in the practice with the communication with the players and stuff like that.
No, but I mean, it could go down to, in terms of his work in the film room, it could come down to working with the rest of the offensive staff. I mean, I got to believe, Taz, it's more than...
Bless you. Yeah, I would think so.
More than just four practices.
I would think so, too, but I'm just saying it's about the production of the position coaches, position players. So
right.
I do think that if you gave the guy a little time, because you did bring him in, but again, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Maybe the guy is in a headbutting contest with the other coaches.
Personalities come into play.
Right, of course they do. You want to be able to work together.
If you gave him benefit of the doubt, now Flaherty was a Giant offensive line coach for 12 seasons, then went to the 49ers for a year, then with the Jaguars for Coughlin when he went down there for a couple seasons. And then he was down in Miami for the last 6 months before he was let go yesterday. So strange to see a coach get fired this early under the tenure of a new head coach, Taz, because you mentioned he just brought him in. But they obviously felt like there was a problem that they need to rectify relatively soon. And they also got to remember, I mean, Flores is coming from a situation up there in New England where he's one of the great offensive line coaches of all time.
Right.
I mean, Dante Scarnecchia is an unbelievable offensive line coach that can turn basically anybody and make anybody a useful offensive lineman. So that's a little bit of a different scenario. He didn't like the way it was trending, so he decided to go in a new direction.
And here's the thing. So he promoted, Flores then promoted analysts who worked under Flaherty. With the offensive line, Dave Gulmeliaro, I don't know how to say this guy's name, he's got a very long, difficult name, to offensive line coach.
Right.
Which I find, really interesting. He was a guy that was helping Flaherty communicate what the players, what to do with the players and how the players were feeling or whatever, the offensive lineman. And so now this guy's the offensive line coach.
He is.
I don't know. And apparently he bombed out of a similar job for a couple of seasons with the Patriots. So I guess that's where the connection is with DiGlomero and Flores was with New England, So.
We'll see what happens down in Miami and how it does all turn out. How about Landon Collins? Let's hear from the current safety for the Washington Redskins. Cut seven. He doesn't let any bygones be bygones. He's upset with the Giants and certainly Dave Gettleman. Take a listen.
Let me paint a scenario for you because, we're doing the whole other team thing. You're on the field pregame facing that other team, and that one person, close your ears, it's Dave Gettleman he's talking about, and he's walking on the sideline. It just happens to be right here. What would you say?
What would I say? I would try to tell one of my defensive back coaches, throw the ball in that direction, give a nice little thud, little run over, quick little...
Just a little thud.
I'm gonna make it a little subtle,
Thud means, don't go to the ground, right? Just a little thud.
Yeah. I don't think he got the skill level to stay on his feet.
Oh, there you go. Wow. I mean, He's clearly funny, well, it is kind of funny. It is. And I think he's kind of just joking around and playing around. That was Mike Garafolo, NFL Network, asking him that question. That's Landon Collins, the safety for the Redskins, clearly bothered by the way that his tenure ended up with the Giants. Bothered by the general manager, Dave Gettleman, and basically warning, don't get too close to the field during warm-ups when Landon Collins is on the field.
I wouldn't want Landon Collins, you know, thudding me. I can tell you that right now.
Be like a
Maybe
train.
When I was young, I would have took it on, but not at this point. But no, and you know, Gettleman, you know, he looks. I mean, I think Collins is excellent, but you know, and I think he'll do a good job with the Washington Redskins. But Gettleman wanted a safety that he felt was a little bit better as you know in his pass coverage play, and so he ends up getting Jabril Peppers, you know, who from the Cleveland Browns. So in the old Odell Beckham deal. So and Peppers is a New Jersey guy and went to Michigan. Tremendous. I'm a big fan of Jabril Peppers, so we'll see. But, you know, yeah, it's pretty funny listening to that right there by Collins, a little thud.
Yeah, and we'll see. And clearly he's bothered. We'll see how much the Redskins are looking for him to regain his form from where he was a couple years ago, where he is one of the guys that could have made the argument should have been Defensive Player of the Year. Let's head down to Jacksonville. And early returns on Nick Foles at quarterback are pretty good. Here's their star corner, Jalen Ramsey. Take a listen.
I've been impressed with Nick. He's making us better. He's making us kind of be on our, excuse my language, he's making us be on our a little bit more than, a little bit sooner than we have previously had to. And that's good. I mean, we out there, we getting in the mindset, we getting locked in. He's making some good throws. They're making some plays.
Yeah, I mean, so you listen to Jalen Ramsey, and there's no doubt. I mean, there's an upgrade at the quarterback spot. Bowles. We mentioned it in terms of the way it ended in Philadelphia. He needed to go. Carson Wentz needed Foles to go. He lands down in Jacksonville. There were high expectations a year ago, Taz. They crashed and burned. 2 years ago, they were in the AFC Championship game. They're looking to get back into form, and they're looking for a guy that's won a Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles to be able to do it down in Jacksonville. And clearly, I would imagine that defense, I mean, there's really no comparison. When you're looking at Blake Bortles and Nick Foles, I would imagine that Nick Foles puts you on your toes, so to speak.
I would agree.
A little sooner in camp than Blake Bortles does.
I would agree. Yeah, you know, it's no shock here, which you know the deal. Like, Nick Foles, when he was with the Eagles, such a player, a quarterback that the players will love. Defensive guys and the offensive guys. We heard the scuttlebutt out of Philadelphia when he was there that Carson Wentz was the guy, but yet players loved Nick Foles. When he got a chance to get that opportunity and took them all the way to dance, Super Bowl MVP and all that jazz, the players loved Nick Foles. So to hear a guy like Jalen Ramsey, who's a little bit of a, you know, he's a confrontational guy, and you never know what he's going to say, Ramsey. So to hear him put over an offensive player, his teammate, his new teammate, like Nick Foles, and kind of endorse him like that, I think that's pretty cool.
Out to Arizona we go. Larry Fitzgerald was a guest on SiriusXM NFL Radio and talked about, as a veteran wide receiver, his impressions of a Kingsbury practice. Take a listen.
The energy is definitely a lot higher. It feels like... you know, like we're a bunch of college kids running around, high intensity. He wants it very competitive. So I would say that's probably the biggest difference.
Yeah, and you would expect that. I mean, Kingsbury, an offensive mind, comes in. You know, he wants to set a tone and a tempo early on of the way that he's going to handle practices. He's looking at college tempo, you know, and upbeat. I'm sure that's kind of his personality, Taz. So, and Fitzgerald is, you know, an all-time great.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer out in Canton, Ohio at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I mean, he's been that good of an NFL wide receiver, a legendary player. And those are impressions early on of Cliff Kingsbury. Now we have to see if Murray can get him the football and if that offense from Texas Tech can work in the National Football
League. Well, that's the deal, man. And if you got a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, who is, talk about a player of good character. This is the guy who's of all good character. Like you said, first ballot Hall of Fame, you know, legendary receiver who's still rocking and rolling. You know, he's endorsing Kingsbury, and a guy like Kyler Murray, I would assume, is leaning on Fitzgerald to learn a lot. I know I saw a thing, Moose, on the NFL Network a couple days ago, probably, and Kurt Warner, you know, he works for the NFL Network on TV, he was interviewing Larry Fitzgerald and at practice, and they had a couple of the wide receivers, the younger rookies of the Cardinals come over in the interview, and it was really cool to see these young guys and how much they respect Fitzgerald and Kurt Warner.
Cool.
Yeah, it was really cool segment. Really cool. I couldn't believe. I know one of the receivers was Andy Isabella. sworn he went to UMass, whatever. But I know he was one of the guys, and I think the other kid was Chad Williams. There was another guy, too. I can't recall his name. My point, Keyshawn Johnson. That's okay. Who it was. Dude, I couldn't believe how much.
San Diego State.
How much bigger Fitzgerald was and Warner than these rookie receivers. These rookie receivers, they look like high school players. They see these guys are full grown ass men. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I was right, by the way. Isabella, UMass.
Yeah. Warner is, 6'2, 6'3, something like that. Yeah. So I didn't see that, but that's pretty cool. Really is. Let's head out to Oakland next.
All right.
How about John Gruden? Talked about the fact of the confidence level that he has in his quarterback, Derek Carr.
The guy throws for 4,100 yards, 70% in some dire, difficult situations. And I'm really confident that we've improved the defense, which will improve the offense. And I think with A.B. and Tyrell Williams and Josh Jacobs, I think Derek's got a chance to do some really cool things.
Well, he should. And Carr said it the other day, I thought it was Taz, where he basically said with the receivers that he has now, you know, he could be even more aggressive with the football. I don't know if that's exactly what Gruden wants to hear, but that's what's going through the mindset of one Derek Carr. Here's Gruden saying he's fired up for season number two.
We are excited. We've added, I think, a really good group of rookies. Three first-round draft choices that you'll talk about, I'm sure.
Yep.
Our second-year players got a lot of experience last year. They better be better this year. And we added some quality veteran guys. We got bigger. We got stronger. We got faster. And I think we got better. We just got to prove it.
Yeah, well, that's what they got to do in both those cuts, courtesy of the NFL Network.
I can't wait for the Hard Knocks. I'm not a Raider fan. I'm not a Raider hater, but
yeah.
I can't wait. Until
it's going to be fun.
Well, because, see, Gruden, as soon as we went and played that sound of John Gruden, it's like, it's almost like he's got a button that's attached to the inside of his forearm that says John Gruden coach button.
Yeah.
And he presses it, and he just turns into this caricature of himself. It's hysterical.
Yeah, no.
And it really is.
I agree with you. I mean, I agree with you. It's great listening to Gruden. You can listen to Gruden talk about the NFL, talk about football, talk about training camp, talk about really anything all afternoon long as he's hoping to have a much better year two back on the NFL coaching sidelines as compared to what transpired year one. Let's head down to New Orleans. Here's their general manager, Mickey Loomis, talking about one of his big players, Michael Thomas, the star wide receiver, is holding out. Here he is talking about the negotiations with his star former Buckeye.
You know, that's the business of football. It's always been the business of football. And I'd like to be able to say, hey, we're close, we're not close. You know, these things aren't always, it's not always just financial. There's structure and there's guarantee and there's a lot of moving elements. And hopefully we'll get this resolved fairly quickly, but not yet.
Well, not yet. And Thomas reportedly looking for around $20 million a year on average, Taz.
Yeah.
The New Orleans Saints, with Sean Payton as head coach, has never paid a skill position player more than $10 million per year. And Michael Thomas, who was, I think, pick 47 coming out of college, maybe 43 coming out of college, is due to make $1.1 million, a tad over, this upcoming year. The guy who had 125 catches, Saints all-time record for a single season a year ago, led him in receiving yards as well and a number of touchdowns. We know how good of a player Michael Thomas is.
Oh, yeah.
So that needs to be rectified. I mean, I know everyone's replaceable. I get it. But he's a star wide receiver. He's an unbelievable player. And the Saints, if they want to get back to the NFC Championship game and this time finish it off and get themselves back to the Super Bowl, they need Thomas, a wide receiver.
Yeah, Moose, we were chatting about this the other day. I mean, you got a guy like Michael Thomas. This kid's just an amazing receiver. His receiving yards last year, he was sixth. You know, he's in the top six in the NFL. You know, guys like Julio Jones, Hopkins ahead of him, Mike Evans. I mean, you know, Juju. But Michael Thomas sitting at sixth. You got to find a way to get this guy some money because whatever, a little north of $1 million a year, that's a severely underpaid for what this guy's production is as a player. You know, Drew Brees wants to get my man signed quick. And every Saints fan wants to see Michael Thomas get signed quick.
No question about it. All right, final stop is on our camp tour here on this Tuesday morning out to Cleveland, Ohio. And with the Browns, here's Freddie Kitchens talking about his young second-year quarterback.
But Baker's just like everybody else. He needs to keep his head down and keep working. You know, last year does not have any impact on this year. Today is not going to have any impact on tomorrow.
I mean, if I break my leg today, my tomorrow will be impacted.
Yes.
I guarantee you that.
Good point. Well said.
So, great analogy. I mean, you can say that. I mean, what I understand what Kitchens is saying, you know, in theory, but and reality are two different things. Listen, I think he's trying to humble him a little bit. You know, if that's entirely possible when he looks at Baker Mayfield coming off, he set a rookie touchdown mark as a quarterback and didn't play every single game a year ago. He's a very confident guy. He's got a huge chip on his shoulder. That's probably the size of him, which is, you know, a tad under 6 feet tall. And he's a playmaker. Gives that Browns team an absolute identity at the most important position. You love Mayfield, and I think Freddie Kitchens is trying to talk tough to a player that he knows is of uber importance to that Browns franchise.
Yeah, listen, man, I think you're right. I mean, I think Freddie Kitchens is publicly trying to, I don't want to say put a divide between him and his quarterback, because I think a lot of people, you know, talk about how they're buddies and how it was pretty well documented that Baker Mayfield wanted him, Freddie Kitchens, as head coach. And that they were tight. They were tight this year as him as the OC. And I don't know, man. I just picture Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield after practice, you know, at a bar together, you know, drinking a cold beer, laughing, listening to some country music. Like, I just picture them as boys. I just do. I mean, Baker Mayfield, as far as him being humble and all that, look, I mean, I know it's camp. It's his second year. I'm seeing stuff on Twitter, him at camp. They're playing music. He's dancing in between plays. He's singing. That's great. He's having a good time. That's awesome. But it doesn't exactly seem like he's, like, really busting his ass out there. I mean, I'm getting a glimpse of it, though. Yeah, I'm getting a glimpse of it.
I'm just saying. I think the work ethic with him is there.
I'm implying it wasn't, but I'm just saying that he's not. This is what I'm trying. I'm wording it wrong. He seems ultra comfy. Ultra comfy. If he was playing for Belichick, would he be that comfortable?
I don't know. I don't know. You might not even know about it if he's dancing or not. I mean, they keep everything.
It's true.
They keep everything.
I mean, could you picture Tom Brady doing that?
No, but Tom Brady's got no rhythm.
That's a good point.
I mean, either. So I don't see Tom Brady doing a lot.
He's got no rhythm.
But I will say this about Mayfield, Taz. I don't worry about motivation with Mayfield.
No, I don't either.
I don't worry about him not putting the work ethic in. I think the star stuff comes along with it. He understands that. But I think Mayfield has a deep desire to be an all-time great quarterback.
Oh, no, I do, too.
And so, therefore, I don't worry about him not knowing or doing stuff. I get concerned about other guys, you know.
Yeah.
Other guys that had success initially that you look at it, and Bill Parcells always had a great line, you never want a star as your quarterback.
Right. I never heard that.
You want a great quarterback, you don't want a star to be your quarterback.
That's a really good point.
You know, you don't want a guy that's not going to put the work in and do that. And, you know, we've seen guys where they've had initial success and then they've crashed and burned. I don't worry about that with Mayfield.
Yeah.
I think Mayfield's feeling good about himself, and he should test. Oh. He's got a lot of playmakers around him.
He's feeling real good about himself, which I think that's why I mentioned Belichick. I think coaches like Andy Reid or Belichick maybe would say to him, hey, kid, you got to calm down a little bit privately. You got to relax a little bit. You should be happy. You should be comfortable. You're the quarterback. We got it, and we want you to be the quarterback, but you got to be a little humble here. I don't think they're worried about his work ethic. You're right. Everything you said about him, there's no doubt. The kid, you know, walk on Jones, all that. He does get it, but the thing is, he's putting a massive, as if there's not a big enough target on this offense.
Oh, he's putting a bullseye.
Oh my God!
But I think he thrives off that task.
Well, I think you're right.
I think he likes being the target. Yeah. I think he likes people talking about him. I think he likes people hating on him. I think he feeds off that in a strange way.
I'm telling you, right? No, you're right. No, and I dig it. Here's the thing. To me, this year, I am more intrigued to watch Baker Mayfield than last year, because we're going to see how good he really is.
That's a good point.
Once these coordinators and these defensive players have figured him out.
Yeah, maybe he gets humbled a little
bit. We'll see what happens.
Maybe it doesn't come as easy as it did year one in his rookie year. So there you go.
Rumor has it. Let me interrupt you.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to finish your deal there?
Yeah, can I finish speaking and then you can talk? Are you going to just continue to jump?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Taz. No problem. Appreciate that. There you have it. You look around the National Football League here on this Tuesday morning.
I get excited sometimes. You know, I'm so...
Well, I understand. No. Yes, I know. Trust me, I get it.
I'm getting rumor. Rumor has it we have a social media update.
Oh, we do? Okay.
Yeah. What should we name our hashtag training camp segment? The campgrounds, gone gridiron camping, go/gone camping. 54% thus far say the campgrounds.
Nice.
So Gone Gridiron Camping's got 11%. Gridiron Camping has 29%. Go/Gone Camping, that's the Moose's deal.
Mark Malusis.
That's got 6%, Moose. Oh. Sorry.
Yeah.
By the way, then this guy comes in late to the dance show.
You should have fired a name in there.
Excuse me?
You should have fired a name in there.
No, I didn't want my...
Why not?
I figured let the audience... I didn't want my suggestions in with the audience because it's the audience's show at the end of the day. What's that? At the end of the day. At the end of the day, it's the audience's show. You know what I'm saying? But somebody came in a little late to the dance here, a wrestling historian at Let's Go Back to WCW. That's a good tag. The War Room, he said.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that's not part of it now. Sorry.
No, that's not it. So.
Yeah. Sorry.
Whatever. All right. So there
the campgrounds, the Kingsman. He's winning right now.
Very nice. Well done. Congratulations. 855-212-4CBS.
Very genuine of you, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're so sincere.
I said congratulations.
Oh, yeah, you seem like you meant it.
Well,
I think Pete's not here because the Kingsman, you know, he hates him.
Right? I like queso.
Hates a strong word, but it fits the way Pete is with all the wrestling fans.
Come back. We'll talk about Le'Veon Bell's apology. We'll do that next. Taz Moose, CBS Sports Radio.
This is basketball legend Christian Laettner, and you're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. Oh. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, tonight, 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific, CBS Sports Network brings you tennis like you've never seen it before. Don't miss this men's and women's action-packed showdown between Washington and San Diego. It's World Team Tennis on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. Dave Lapham is going to join us, coming your way about 8-9 minutes from now. We'll talk a little Cincinnati Bengals football. Camps are open for them. The A.J. Green injury early. The practice is out there at Dayton, Ohio to commemorate 100 years of the NFL.
Yeah, that's right. I'll tell you, I had a little issue last night. The house was annoying. Not good.
What happened?
Not good, my friend. Real quick, I don't want to waste too much time on this. You know, we have central air in the house, right, in the casa. You know, and we have, of course, an upstairs unit. We have a downstairs unit. They're massive units. They sit in a property we had to buy for these units.
Right.
So what happens is...
Logical.
Yeah, logical. What happens
economical
is,
as well.
Yeah, the Kingsman's like, really?
What happens really? What happens is, walking aside, the freaking upstairs unit, and that's where all of the bedrooms are, not working.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, and it was hot, and it stopped working around 5. Now it was. I shouldn't say not working. I think we just need a big blast of Freon. It's blowing out air. Mm. It's just hot.
Oh,
so yeah, and so now it's like a problem. So because usually I like the bedroom keep that SOB at around
cold
66 degrees.
Do you have a guy coming over today?
Well, I got my guy Pete. Coincidentally enough, his name
nice.
Is... Nice. No, this is the problem.
PDAC.
No, here's the problem. Well, he is. He's, you know, ACP, actually.
ACP,
you're close.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Frankie Freon.
Yeah, Frankie. Here's the problem. Here's the problem with him. Okay, this is no joke. I text him. I go, Pete. He goes, it's Taz. He goes, what's the problem with the AC? I haven't heard from him in 2 years. What's going on? Like, he knows. I just, whenever I need something, I contact him. I'm that type guy. I go, yeah, bro, look, here's the deal. He goes, look, I'm away for a couple of days. I'll be back on Thursday.
Oh, so you got to deal with it.
Hold on a second. How does an AC guy who owns a bit, like he owns a bit, it's him. How is he away during the summer when it's 90 degrees, 95 degrees? Why is he going away now?
Well, you called him 2 years, so he's not going to wait around for your phone call.
Where are the horses? Are they running that aqueduct this time of year?
No, Saratoga.
It was Saratoga. That's where I bet you he is. That's where he is.
Well, good for him.
I guarantee you he's at Saratoga. Guarantee.
They're not running. They haven't been
he's
running
just
like
there. He's ready for them to run.
Good
he's
for
just
him.
There. That's what I'm thinking. Dude, he should be
you
home.
You call another person, get it fixed.
No, this guy gives me a good deal.
Oh, so yeah, then you got to wait and sweat.
Yeah. I do. Yeah, I know. My wife said, can we just call somebody else? I go, no. No.
The unit didn't
There's
go,
There's a good
though.
Chance she
it's
called somebody
running?
Else already.
Yeah.
The unit's still
running?
Still going, yeah. I think we just need like a big injection of Freon in that thing. That's what I think we need. Not good. Just laying in bed, sweat my ass off. Not fun.
Oh, that's
you know, laying in miserable. And yet I'm here. I'm peppy. I'm exuberant.
Yes.
And I'm a great co-host, great for the audience, great for the co-workers I work with, all the men and women here at CBS Sports Radio and WFAN. I'm still cheery and peppy and bursting with joy.
You're right.
That's right.
To all those that don't have AC, you know now how they feel.
Well, I should have slept in one of my dens downstairs or in the basement. We have a full AC unit down there, too.
Could have done that.
I should have, but, you know, I got my clock radio near me and still clock radio. 1986. Popped myself on that.
All right, here we go. Let's go.
Bogus,
take it away,
Bogus. Here you want to go. Here's your report. It is sponsored by Geico.
Got a guest coming up, bud.
That's awesome.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more in car insurance. If you can work in Cabo, why not work in Cabo? Ezekiel Elliott will spend his holdout in Mexico for the foreseeable future, staying in shape at his agent's house. Zeke and the Cowboys have reportedly exchanged contract proposals recently, but no deal is imminent, so the boys are signing veteran running back Alfred Morris. He played in Dallas in 2016 and 17, then spent last season with the Niners. The Saints have released veteran receiver Cameron Meredith. He had yet to come all the way back from 2017's major knee injury. The Saints, they have younger receivers playing better now. It is now the day before baseball's trade deadline. Lefty Jason Vargas on the move from the Mets to the Phillies, which must come as a surprise to Vargas, who dismissed trade rumors when asked Sunday if they were bothering him.
I don't really think that there's been a whole lot of speculation in my way, so I think maybe if there was, there would probably be more thought.
And now he's a Philly thanks to a 26-year-old double-A catcher coming back to the Mets. The Brewers bringing back righty Jordan Lyles, sending a minor league pitcher to the Pirates. Lyles finished last season with Milwaukee. He was supposed to start for those Pirates last night in Cincinnati.
And Iglesias sends a fly deep right center field on the run. Marte at the wall. He turns and looks. It is gone. Jose Iglesias with a grand slam. It is a 10-run Reds second inning.
Tommy Thrall on Reds radio. Replacement starter Alex McRae charged with the first seven of those 10 runs in the second. Cincinnati won 11-6, extending the Bucco skid to 9 games. Guys?
All right. Thank you, Andrew.
Oh, we appreciate that.
Yeah, you got it. Great job, buddy.
Sorry.
We got a little Bengals football coming your way next. Dave Lapham's going to join us. Bengals Radio Network color analyst. Good guys joined the program before. We'll talk a little Cincy football. We'll do that next. It's Taz and Moose on this Tuesday morning, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Bengals were sending a blitz. Roethlisberger throws over the middle, intercepted by Sean Williams.
Nice.
Running to the 50, down the far sideline to the 40.
On
his feet at the 30, the
20,
the 10, the 5, touchdown.
How about that?
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Always great to be joined by Dave Lapham, Cincinnati Bengals Radio Network color analyst, has joined us before. Adds a lot of flavor to those Bengals broadcasts. Hey, Dave, Taz and the Moose with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning.
Dave, what's up?
Morning, Taz. Moose, how you guys doing?
We're doing well, Dave. We're doing well. Let's start here. The Green injury. I know there was some Bengal players led by Boyd that were critical of practicing in the field out there in Dayton. Do you think that played any role at all? I know the coach, Zach Taylor, said it didn't play any role, the Green injury. What was your take on how all that went down, Dave?
Yeah, the field is 14 years old, and AstroTurf field was hard. No question about that. Guys were, slipping a little bit. They bust up there, so they only had one pair of cleats, couldn't change cleats out or whatever. So there was, some issues guys had with that. But AJ's injury was, he goes airborne and, came down awkwardly. So I'm not sure if the surface would have made any difference in terms of, how he landed. That was the problem with the injury. And, it was a little out and up route, that he's run, probably hundreds of thousands of times. And this time it just didn't work out. It's unbelievable, the black cloud that's hanging over this team in terms of injury. It's nuts.
Yeah, it stinks. I mean, you know, just looking at it from afar, Dave, no, totally agree. I mean, it is nuts. You know, the thing is, too, like, with new head coach Zach, with Zach Taylor, I mean, what's the reaction, you know, honestly? Like, is it, like, are people optimistic about it, you know, with Zach Taylor as the new HC?
Yeah, I think you know, everybody felt like it was time for a change.
Right.
And it's going to be different. There's no doubt about that. You know, will it be better? That's to be determined, but it'll be different. And his, you know, the offense that he's installing, I mean, he's marrying the running game to the passing game about as well as I've ever seen. It's put together extremely well. And, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of chunk plays on first and second down. I kind of liken it to when Gary Kubiak was rolling down with the Houston Texans, I'd watch end zone tape. And, you know, at the mesh point when the quarterback was with the running back and the offensive line's coming off the football, that, you know, I'd freeze it and say, all right, is this a run or is this a play action pass? And it was 50-50. I mean, it was pure guesswork. So that puts a lot of pressure on, you know, the linebackers and safeties, and he's got a lot of motion and jet sweep stuff and fast motion, and then back the other way again. And, you know, he's just trying to distract their eyes enough to cause issues. I like his scheme. You know, it's just a matter of how many bodies he's going to have out there to execute it.
Well, and that's fair in terms of and losing a guy like A.J. Green, you know, and having him out for the next 6 to 8 weeks with torn ligaments in that left ankle. What about the impact that you think he'll have on a talented running back like Joe Mixon?
Yeah, I mean, Joe Mixon's going to be a big key. Joe and Giovanni Bernard, I mean, this offense is going to be based on running the football. And they want to establish that running game. And so, you know, Joe led the AFC in rushing last year, and we keep, you know, describing. I mean, A.J. Green, you know, he'll empty the box out. I mean, he requires a lot of attention out there. Now when you're down a guy like that, they can put another body in that box and make it tougher for Joe Mixon. So it is. It's like, you know, you want to have all your weapons complementing each other and kind of one hand washing the other. And, you know, now they get one hand behind their back. I mean, I'm looking at yesterday's practice at training camp. And it's amazing, you know, when you think about it, all these number one picks. Jonah Williams has got his arm in a sling because he had the labrum surgery.
Wow.
Billy Price is out with a foot injury, number one draft pick. John Ross is down with a hamstring, number one draft pick. A.J. Green down with an ankle injury, number one draft pick. You know, all these number one draft picks, you know, not even able to participate. They're all out there watching if they can. A.J.'s in the training room getting rehab done. It's amazing. The number of players that weren't working with the team yesterday.
Yeah, that's frustrating, Dave. And you know that as a former player. And you talked about how the Bengals want to kind of get, you know, run the ball first type deal with a guy like Mixon or Bernard. Well, maybe you could break it down a little bit, that offensive line. I know you just mentioned about Price being hurt, the awesome center. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about the old line and give us some insight what's going on there.
Yeah, well, you know, now with the injury to the number one draft pick, I mean, before he even – And he's totally frustrated. I mean, I talked to him yesterday at practice. He never missed a game in high school, college. He didn't miss practices.
Wow.
You know, now he gets drafted and he's done for the year, Jonah. So they had moved Cordy Glenn inside the guard and moving him back out to tackle. The left guard position's wide open. I mean, it's a derby over there. Best man wins. You know, Billy Price will be back at center. In his absence, Trey Hopkins is playing center. When Billy comes back, he'll play center as well as, you know, put his hat in the ring for that left guard job. John Miller, they got from the Buffalo Bills at the right guard position. He's an upgrade. I've had unsolicited comments from defensive linemen and linebackers saying, hey, man, 6-7, the guy's a beast. He's going to help us. And that's John Miller. So, you know, they like him. And then, you know, they signed Bobby Hart. They signed him to a contract extension at the right tackle.
Big right tackle, so,
Yep. So they're, you know, it's How many linemen they're going to keep active on game day? Everybody has to make those kind of decisions. Depends on position versatility. How many guys can play more than one position, and they're sorting all that stuff out.
Gotcha. You know, Dave, you mentioned in terms of you like Taylor and, you know, his scheme offensively. What about Taylor, the head coach? Have you been impressed with him early on taking over this franchise?
Yeah, I think that, you know, he's just turned 36 years old, and it seems to me today's athlete, they don't want a father figure necessarily. They want a big brother, you know, and Zach's kind of like the big brother. He's not a very much older than, you know, a few of the veteran players on the football team. And he's got a good message for him every day. I mean, he's all about, you know, building relationships and You know, he's definitely got their attention. I mean, he's got putting accountability on him for sure. He's the first meeting he had. He was standing outside the meeting room looking at his clock, and you know, if you're supposed to be there at 9 o'clock, at 8:59, he's closing the door and finding you if you're not in there.
Really?
So you know, he's got their attention. Now he's earning their trust and trying to build relationships, and he's all about that part of it. And all the players and other assistant coaches I talked to, including the guys who were on Marvin's staff, say that he does have a good message, you know, for the players every day, and he does grab their attention. And there's a lot of energy and enthusiasm, and I think it's twofold. It's, you know, he's young and exuberant and energetic and all that, and plus the coaching change. There's always like a little boost before the coaching change, after a coaching change. But right now, it's the honeymoon period. You know, like Tyson said, everybody's got a game plan until you get hit in the mouth, you know. Ooh.
Absolutely. So, hey, Dave, is it weird, though, without Marvin, you know, Lewis being around there as the head coach? And you know, it's got to be a little strange. All the years he was there, it's got to be strange.
It is. You know, 16 years. I mean, that's a heck of a long run, you know. It's the only guy that was at his spot longer was Bill Belichick when Marvin's tenure ended, and deservedly so for Belichick with all those Super Bowls, you know. And I think three straight losing seasons – you know, and it was, you know, 6-10, 7-9, a couple of them. You know, not, you know, 2-14, 3-13, but, you know, you don't want to ever experience those kind of things. But the thing is, you know, when it's the last 3 years, it's 14, 15, and 16, instead of years maybe 2, 3, and 4, when you're, you know, starting it out, you know, he'd made his playoff run 5 years in a row, 7 playoff appearances. Unfortunately, he didn't win a playoff game, but, you know, he made that run and achieved that level of success and then slid back. And once it's 3 years in a row, Mike Brown, who's as patient as any owner in the league, had determined at that point, you know, we got to go in another direction.
We're talking to Dave Lapham, Bengals Radio Network color analyst. Dave, what should the expectations, realistic expectations here? They get some guys back healthy. You know, Green, he might not be there week one against Seattle, but he gets back in relatively short order here with these torn ligaments in his left ankle. What should the expectations for the Bengals be this season?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's and it is. It's going to be determined by what hands are on deck. You know, it's and it's like that for you know every coach in the NFL. If every coach wanted to, you know, finish training camp with everybody healthy, which is impossible. I mean, there's 100% injury risk to 100% of the players every snap. The Bengals are finding that out. I mean,
right.
45 minutes into their first workout. You know, they're down all these guys I was talking about, just off-season stuff and injuries with non-contact stuff. It's crazy. But, you know, I think three of their first four games are on the road. They open in Seattle, and then the fourth game they play Monday Night Football at Pittsburgh. 3 out of 4 on the road. 6 out of their first 8 on the road. So, I mean, if they can, you know, get through that around the 500 mark, it turns the second half of the season, 6 out of 8 at home, 3 out of the last 4 at home. So, you know, if you can hang in there, the first half of the season, you might be able to make some noise in the second half. Now, if you're buried, you know, if you're 2-6, even 3-5, you know, you got a lot of work to do at that point, halfway through the season. That's why it's so important, you know, to have guys like AJ Green, your best offensive threat available to you in the early stages of the season. It's tough enough going to Seattle and going to Pittsburgh, and you know, with AJ Green, without him, it's even more of a chore.
Dave Lapham, Bengals Radio Network color analyst. Hey, Dave, thank you for spending a couple minutes with us here on this Tuesday morning. Enjoy the rest of camp and enjoy the rest of summer until football, when it means something, is right around the corner. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
I hear that, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Take care, buddy. He always does a good job.
He's great.
A realistic approach he had to it when you look at Cincinnati.
Cuse guy. He went to Syracuse. I don't know if you know that. You guys the same age?
No.
No. He was in the NFL draft in 74. Yeah, I guess not.
No. Let's read the Wikipedia before you ask that question.
I'm not reading Wikipedia.
Let's hit the 3. Oh, when that comes your way, Nate. What?
What?
You fire something out, I can't fire back. Don't be so sensitive.
All right. Oh, me?
Taz Moose, CBS Sports Radio.